Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at the astrology of February. As always, I have with me my friend and colleague Alex Amorosi, who is going to join me to talk about all of the major transits of the month ahead. He's been doing this with me, I think, since like August or September or something like that. So it's been a fun ritual that we've had every month. I know you guys have really enjoyed hearing what Alex has to say as well. So it will be really nice to have him on today. Again, a look at some big transits for the month of February. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments in the comments section. Click the notification bell for updates if you want to know when I'm going live or when a new talk drops. You can also find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. If you go there, you can also check out all of my readings and courses. And we do have the masterclass series coming up in February, which is a four-part series, one per season. So you can check out those masterclasses on the website. If you go into the course tab and click on masterclass series, you can learn all about it. There are some need-based tuition options, of course, if you need assistance. Any questions about any of that, again, you can email us info@nightlightastrology.com. Any stories to share about any of the transits we go over this month, circle back around to this video, use the hashtag grabbed, and tell us your story. We occasionally aggregate those stories and I'll make storytelling episodes, which you heard one of those last week. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. They take a while to put together, and I like to sort through, you know, all of the stories that are sent in, and thank you to everyone who sends them in. So if you got some good ones this month, be sure to share them. All right. Well, without further ado, my friend Alex, welcome back.
Thanks, Adam. That's always a great way to introduce the Leo rising, by the way. Without further ado, yeah. Alex shall appear.
That's right. You guys don't know Alex yet. You can check out his work at alexamorosi.com. You can also find Alex on Instagram, Alex Amorosi Healing. He is like my sidekick for the astrological overviews of the month. He's done some horoscopes with me in the past too. We're not going to make him do that every single month because horoscopes are almost worth jumping off a roof over, but I'm just kidding. All right. Well, anyway, we have a lot of good transits to get into this month. I'm going to go through them as I usually do in sequential order. And Alex and I are just going to wrap about the transits for February. How has your new year been going so far, Alex?
It's been going well. Although at the beginning of the year, I was kind of like, this year is bullshit. Like, what the hell? And I've gotten that feedback from clients too, who are like, what's going on? Like, I feel like it should be New Year. And I feel like as the Lunar New Year hit with this last new moon, now I feel like it's a new year. Like, I feel like I'm slowly starting to gain steam out of the station into something new.
I completely agree. Actually, I feel like the fact that we had the beginning of, I mean, in a lot of ways that, you know, late January new moon in Aquarius, we were dealing with what looked like maybe Venus being enclosed for a good chunk of the year. And I'm still like wondering about how intense that was, but I had some health stuff come up. I got a little cold. I had like a weird eye infection where I got like one of those like little styes, but then I got like infected and I had to go on antibiotics. And that was during the enclosure. Of course, Venus is my ascendant ruler. So people who are Taurus or Libra rising will often find that enclosure like that could hit your health. Had some like, you know, just like mess my neck up while sleeping one night because my kid crawled in bed with us. So it felt like, yeah, I agree. It kind of felt like a crappy start to the new year in a little way. But then I feel like, you know, once that new moon came through, I completely agree. It's like things have felt like they've shifted.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's interesting because I think, you know, the layer we went through with Jupiter going into Aries, but Mars being retrograde, then Mars goes direct, but Mercury is retrograde. So there was this whole kind of host chain that needed to go from retrograde to direct. And then that Venus enclosure, which I was just like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's lamp it up. But I feel like that enclosure too is interesting. I watched the video you did with Spencer about it, which was really, really interesting. And I didn't think Venus was enclosed until she passed the enclosure, until she passed Saturn. And then I was like, I suddenly feel like I'm in a much better mood and like want to have more fun. Like that, there was something that some weight of seriousness that felt like it left off. So I'm kind of mixed about it too, but it felt, I kind of noticed it after it was over. I felt a little bit more Venus-like coming back to the surface.
Venus getting into her exaltation in Pisces too, which is happening right as we're making this video. Yeah, that shift has been significant. I think for me, it's been this real exercise in patience because Saturn was opposing my natal Venus in Leo. And then, you know, as soon as it got done with that, we had these kind of weighty, you know, enclosure energy at the beginning of the year. And this week, Saturn is finishing up now with a square to my ascendant. So it's just been like, oh, dude. And, you know, in those placements, it tends to be very physical. Like, you know, it's like, it's hit my energy levels. And it's been like, it has been cold here in Minnesota and a lot of snow. Except one of the things that I've been doing is, and I feel like this is a real like Venus in Saturn, like when they were traveling together in Aquarius, I got into this habit of feeling really cooped up and frustrated. And so I'd put on all my snow gear and go for like an hour long hike in a snowy like trail at night, like under the stars, moon, whatever. And I would be like, I'm just going to let the winter into my bones, you know, just try to find some beauty in this like wintry Venus Saturn thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get more Saturn in Aquarius squaring your ascendant either. The king of winter.
Yeah.
You know, moving through that. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think now Saturn moving past the point where you might retrograde over the next few weeks and really beelining towards Pisces, you know, especially for the fixed signs and strong placements in the fixed signs. But I think that there's like hopefully a lightning that's coming because you've been dealing with a lot with that of opposition for a while.
Well, you know, in back-to-back Saturn ruled signs, it's been a long haul for Saturn. And I think, like you said, with the fixed signs, if you have, especially if you have planets, sun, moon, or ascendant ruler in a fixed sign, or if you have fixed signs on the angles, those last 5 degrees, you know, those are the bounds of the malefics. And there's a sense in which the work of Saturn, not just now, but over like 5 years worth of, you know, being in Saturn ruled signs is sort of coming to a close.
Yeah.
I get that feeling right now. It's like, you know, we've got about a month, like next month when we meet to talk about March, we're going to be talking about Saturn moving into a new sign. And I really do feel like one of the themes of this month is like just getting through it, getting through the last of something.
Agreed. And tying up a significant period of time where, you know, wherever the Aquarius part of your chart is like, you know, what are some of the Saturn-like choices or Saturn-like lessons you've learned about limits and boundaries and discipline, or even just solitude and contemplation and the ability to be quiet with oneself and walk on a winter's path at night and, you know, be in that sort of surrounded space of solitude. You know, it's going to be a very interesting month of that for sure.
Yeah. It's funny. I was, you know, one of these, sometimes you have these moments where you realize you're in an archetypal space. Like sometimes I'll be like, I'm having my thoughts and I'm going through my experiences. And then all of a sudden it's like, we interrupt this news to let you know that none of these are just your thoughts and experiences. They have been brought to you courtesy of Saturn, you know, or it's like something like that. you realize that, you know, and for me, it's been really interesting because Uranus is gearing up to square my ascendant ruler now. Saturn has been squaring the ascendant from the 10th house, right? And what I keep running into, like, and this was kind of a theme during Mars retrograde as well for different reasons. And I've gone into that in some of the videos I did on Mars retrograde recently, but like, you know, here's a public perception of who you ought to be or who you are. And it's usually coming from someone in a comment section of like Instagram or YouTube or some place where I publish my content.
Right.
Someone has a very strong opinion about who I ought to be that I'm not being, I'm not adhering to that. And it's like, I want to go nuclear. Like it wouldn't bother me in the past. I've gotten that stuff. I've been doing this in the public eye and you have too, as a yoga teacher, those things don't usually bother me. But recently, for whatever reason, I think it's funny that I was like writing this, you know, sometimes I'll write a response and I won't send it, but I'll just write it for myself. I don't know if you ever do that.
Right. Yeah. So get it out of your system.
Right. Exactly. So someone was like, someone was going on about how they don't think that I'm spiritual enough any longer after changing, you know, my name back to Adam and so forth. Yeah. So I was like, I went nuclear. I mean, I just completely, of course I didn't send it, you know, I unsent it or whatever, but it was during that moment where, you know, Saturn's coming into the square with my ascendant. It's just in this past week. and I was like, I had one of those moments where I was like, this is brought to you by Saturn in your public 10th house, squaring your ascendant. You're not going to tell me who I am. You know, like, it was so funny.
This program has been brought to you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. That's amazing. Yeah. So, do you have any major transits going on right now? If you care to share.
Well, I can, from being slightly more down the highway on you, I have Uranus squaring my ascendant right now and has been stationing. So my ascendant is 15.5 of Leo and Uranus just stationed at 14.56 of Taurus.
Yeah.
And so, it's been interesting with Uranus right on my ascendant and Mars in my 11th house in Gemini, but, you know, really stationing, squaring my natal Mars in Virgo. I've been extremely restless combined with completely exhausted. And I think it comes from like this sort of feeling like my nervous system has just been overcharged all the time. But it also has been like really shaking loose. Like Uranus squaring my ascendant has been really interesting because like we've talked about, you know, people who watched last month, we were talking about, you know, the public shift I've been making from more yoga teaching to more spiritual healing work and astrology. And that's just been a huge, Uranus has been like I keep getting these sort of downloads of like, screw it, just do it. Screw it, just do it. Screw it, just do it. Like it just keeps, it's like this little gremlin that just kind of sits here. Screw it, just do it. Yeah, just go nuts. Like you're not being, just go all the way. Like, you know,
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny how Uranus always says screw it too. Like that's like that.
Screw it.
You know, it's Uranus if it starts with screw it.
And even if it's not a good idea to screw it, it's like, yeah. I'm going to just check that. I don't think I need to go that far or say that. But the other thing that I've been getting back into is a lot more physical movement. And I've been making sure every morning to do I've been doing a lot of center body core work and a lot more movement-based yoga, which is different for me. I still do yoga, but I don't do as intensely as I have. But it's felt like I've been like literally been charged with lightning for the last, since December.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. A lot of people describe Uranus transit to the ascendant or ascendant ruler as like, well, you know, electric, like that they feel sort of cosmic cocaine, you know?
Exactly. Like I wake up at 2 a.m. and I'm like, wow, I could go write a book. I could go clean the house. I could go.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, that's an interesting one. It'll be interesting for as it comes down. All right.
Well, and starting the month off, let's get into it. On February 3rd, to start off the month, I've just gone to some of what I consider to be the biggest transits of the month for everyone. Yeah. If you're newer to listening to the channel, I don't cover every transit. I tend to cover the big squares, oppositions, some big trines or sextiles, but usually it's I'm going to pay attention to, you know, the squares, the oppositions, the conjunctions, maybe a big trine here or there. So February 3rd, the sun squares Uranus. So we start off the month with a Uranian moment. You guys will get two videos on the sun Uranus later this week that I have made. And I had a lot of fun with the making of those videos where what I did was I came up with five collective ideas and five personal ideas. So they're two separate videos. In the five collective ideas, I said, these are five ideas that Sun and Uranus will try to sell you on about your place within the collective. And these are five responses or like, nah, I don't agree with yous, that the same complex could generate. So in other words, this is like two sides of a Sun-Uranus debate about your role within the collective. And then the second video is on five stories that the Sun and Uranus will try to tell you about you yourself as an individual, apart from the collective. And then here are five responses where Sun-Uranus will go, uh-uh, and to present. So the thing that I've been fascinated about is the way in which transits can show up in our heads as the ideas that we're having and the debates that we're having. And oftentimes both sides of a debate that we're having is reflective of a planetary complex. You won't even know it, but you're going through this whole debate in your head and it's a transit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I played with that this week. So you guys should have fun with that. But I feel like the Sun Uranus is a great transit to further break apart the doldrums that we were talking about for the start of the new year. It tends to be a transit that ignites a lot of excitement and enthusiasm, helps people feel like they're making some significant breakthroughs personally or professionally or in relationships, the urge to emancipate yourself or to break out of habits or patterns or structures that aren't working any longer can be pretty strong. What do you think about Sun Uranus? What have your experiences of Sun Uranus been like?
Well, it's interesting. We were just talking about Uranus squaring my ascendant because my ascendant's in Leo. So this is my ascendant ruler squaring Uranus. And so it's, I think, you know, on a very general sense, it's really good for the fixed signs, which can, by their very nature, become fixed. This is the way we do things. This is the way things are done. This is, you know, and I definitely know with a Leo ascendant, there can be sort of like, I just sit here doing my Leo thing from my throne and bestow, you know, it's like, well, you got to shake it up a little bit. You got to move around a little bit. And I think Sun Uranus is, I like that idea of kind of breaking up the doldrums, Adam, too, but it also, and also it's this sense of innovation. Like, I think especially, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere and in the latitudes we live in the world, you can get so in the winter of just like, well, it's another great day here in Boston. Well, it's another great day. And Sun Uranus is like, yeah, but you could go cross country skiing. You could go, you know, I don't know, create some crazy science experiment, but you're suddenly downloaded with all these really fun and interesting ideas that previously you probably never would have seen. It sort of ignites the cosmic creativity, so to speak.
Yeah. If I were to do a science experiment, it would look exactly like it did when I was about six, which would mean that there were twigs, acorns, and food coloring inside like a jar of water, and I'd be showing my mom. Like, that's about as far as my scientific experiments will go, but
it's the ultimate science experiment for a Taurus rising. I love it.
That's right. It's exactly right. No, you know, I think that for me the science experiment these days has really been, you know, the different ways of taking care of my body, you know. Yeah. That's with Uranus in my first house, it's been a lot about, you know, how am I sleeping, how am I eating, you know, tracking macros with my personal trainer, like, and really playing with, am I someone who does better with like more carbs, or, you know, like, so I think. And our well-being, whether you're doing something like Ayurveda or yoga or you're working out or whatever, to me, the Sun Uranus square with Uranus in that earthy, sensual, you know, such a physical sign of Taurus could speak to, you know, the engineering of the body. How are we, our body is a temple. And if the temple's, you know, kind of to use an analogy, I guess, it's like if you beautify the temple, make it really clean, it's like, well, then the kinds of things that can come through that channel are in some ways like more creatively satisfying. I don't know if that's the right way of putting it.
Yeah. And that I think also riffing off of that, it's experimental. It's like, yeah, well, here are the things that I might want to do that are caring of the body, and that in with the Sun in Aquarius too, that you have the, you know, what I always love about Aquarius is Aquariuses can step back and they can look in from the outside and being like giving it an evaluation. Like, yeah, well, I was doing this particular, you know, style of movement. Maybe I need to tweak it in this way, and having sort of a rational, more Aquarian, I guess scientific is the for lack of a better word, way of looking in on those ideas. Which the Sun is, because the Sun is the ruler of Leo, the opposite sign, the Sun is not always accustomed to doing, is going to the outside of the, you know, the outskirts where Saturn is and looking in on itself. And it's a great self-reflective time in addition to being experimental, I think.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. The very next day, on February 4th, we get exalted Venus in the square with Mars in Gemini. In my mind, Venus Mars squares being, you know, married, they go one of two ways. It's either usually like fun, sexy, romantic, playful time, or it's like, get ready. We're going to fight. We're going to argue and bicker. Or it's just funny how it's like, and I can never really tell, like, when the Venus and Mars go through an opposition or when Venus and Mars go through a square, they are either very playful, dynamic, creative periods for me, and oftentimes with an emphasis on, like, you know, my marriage, or they are periods of time where there's just a lot more snippy. It's like a lot snippier and like, well, you don't agree with me, I don't agree with you. You know, it's like, it's funny how it can go either way. But it's interesting to see that, okay, you have the Sun and Uranus coming through in a square, but then you have Venus and Mars in a square. And what comes up for me right away is, you could have all the certainty and confidence and excitement in the world with the Sun square Uranus, but you might immediately run into someone or something that doubts or scrutinizes you. Or someone that says, you know, well, I don't think you ought to do it that way. Or that, you know, there could be some kind of buzzkill that comes up right away, probably a person or a relationship or someone that displays a different value or that puts up some kind of doubt or question that you may not feel like you want to deal with because there's so much excitement in the air. That's the picture that kind of comes to my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, like, you know, one of the things that I think is helpful about the square is with Venus in the superior position over Mars, that, and in her exaltation, you do have a square relationship, which we have to take into account. But Venus, to me here, Mars has been through such an intense intellectual cerebral journey in Gemini, in Mercury's sign, that Venus from Pisces here also might add a little grace to whatever, and I'm speaking hopefully here because Mars is continuing to square my natal Mars forever in Virgo, but like a little grace and softness and ease. And maybe this doesn't all have to be so cerebral and thought out and logical. There's play and dream possible here too. But it might not feel like the easiest fit in relationship because you're talking about a square and also a water sign to an air sign, which oftentimes have a hard time relating to each other, those two elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. You could say too, that Venus is ready to charm or win Mars over somehow. And, you know, if you think of Mars in Gemini as a skeptical, scrutinizing, more critical presence, Venus could be overcoming that with something more sensual, more emotional. This is the moment, for example, where I'm just imagining if I'm Mars and my wife is Venus. Well, recently when Venus in Aquarius was square to Uranus and Taurus, she convinced me to go to this movement party, and it was like, you know, everyone just kind of snaking around in a sage fog covered room with, you know, trancy new age music going on. And I was like, and my wife loves that. She loves to move and dance and everything. And me, I was like, I think they're all crazy. I'm the only normal person here. They're all nuts. You know, like, no, I'm just kidding. It was much more uncomfortable for me, but I ended up having a lot of fun. Like, I ended up like actually moving, and it turns out that my body likes to just move and there doesn't need to be a rhyme or reason for it. And it was actually a very healing experience. I feel like this is a similar dynamic where Venus and Pisces could easily overcome that cerebral, mental, masculine Mars and be like, let's just shut up and dance with me, you know?
Exactly. Like, let's just get out our dream journals and compare. We don't even, you know, like, we don't have to have a reason. Like, let's make some tea.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of idea. Yeah. So I like that. I like that.
Totally. There could also be some smoothing or softening of hard edges in communication, speech, or mind stuff. That's what comes to my mind.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Let's move on to full moon in Leo on the 5th. It's, you know, just like bang, bang, bang to start the month. So we've got
speaking
now
of Uranus.
Yeah, this full moon is in a T square with Uranus, so super potent, very powerful full moon. You want to lead off? What are your thoughts when you look at this one?
I mean, I think that, you know, the full moon in Leo, the sun, you know, is always interesting to me because the sun, the ruler of Leo, by nature, the full moon is in its detriment or its exile as a stranger in a strange land in Aquarius during that time. And so I feel like the moon is sort of carrying the banner of the sun. But what I think and how I would translate that more out of like into the way we would see it in life is with moon square Uranus in the sun sign, it can feel like when there's sort of the sun in Aquarius, I think, can sometimes feel like a little detached from itself, a little bit like there's a me and another me, and they're sort of not functioning in the same space. The moon here is sort of a unifying presence I would see in Leo of like, you can be a stranger in a strange land and that doesn't make you not yourself. You can be in unfamiliar places and unfamiliar places within yourself. And your mental, emotional sphere within the moon can kind of help you solidify that back in the sun's home sign. However, it's square Uranus, so nothing feels stable at that point. But it might be, I mean, if I put that all together, it would be a radical rediscovery of oneself in a maybe unfamiliar way, maybe through the emotional, mental sphere of the moon, that, like we were just saying, Adam, about Uranus, that you have not considered before. Uranus opens the portal to things you have just never seen, but once you see them, you can't unsee them. I don't know if any of that made sense, but that's kind of how I was putting those archetypes together.
Yeah, no, I like that. So if I just kind of riffing off from that, if you think about the sun and the moon as representing some kind of polarity, right? Like, I think the thing you said that I resonated with the most was that there can feel like there's two different versions of you. Right. And that somehow one is true and one is false.
Right.
Well, with Uranus squaring both, I wonder if Uranus presents a third option, an option where, you know, you can contain multitudes, you can contain paradoxes, you can contain, you know, working contradictions. Contradiction might not be the right word, but just tensions of different qualities that are very different from one another, and you can hold the tension of those qualities. I feel like Uranus squaring could represent an interesting moment of integration for things that feel like they can't see each other or don't get along with each other or feel like polar opposites that we don't know how to carry. And suddenly, you know, this Uranian full moon kind of moment comes along and the lights are square to Uranus, and Uranus says, there's elements of truth to both sides of this equation. And here's an interesting way that you could express or carry both ends authentically.
Yeah. And that you don't, you know, I think there's something interesting when we talk a lot about in astrology with like Jungian ideas of like integration, and that, you know, you're trying to sort of integrate everything into this one self, but that you're sometimes just holding disparate aspects of yourself under one roof, you know, different as that don't particularly make sense, but they both make you, you, you know, like I've always had a really skeptical, rational, materialistic mind, but I also have had a super spiritual, esoteric, bring the more out there, the better type of mind. And this is like a time where I might think, I've always thought like, well, I have to unify those. I have to make it some, I have to pick a lane. And I'm thinking like at a time like this, it might be a time where it's like, you know what? Both lanes on that highway work. And sometimes I'm in that lane and sometimes I'm in the other lane, but I don't have to necessarily try to make this one thing. I can have these two aspects of myself that feel like they're at odds with each other actually be contained under one roof and not have to be the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So in either way, we would say this has the potential to be a, you know, there's an unpredictable quality about this full moon. There's a surprising Uranian, you know, moment here where we can be, I think we can be captured by an energy that we weren't expecting. And that makes, I think, with Uranus along with the North Node, I'm not too worried about it being erratic and disruptive in like a, let's say, more of a destabilizing and scary way. I think generally we're talking about something erratic and unpredictable that has to do with finding some greater sense of wholeness or incorporating something that is complicated.
Which Uranus does really well. Uranus does that really well.
Especially, you know,
by like the way, go ahead.
No, just going to say, in a Venus ruled sign with Venus exalted, Venus having just overcome Mars, that's why I lean more toward this being somehow positive and harmonious.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, I was just about to make a wise ass comment that there was no big pink arrow this month, but
not yet.
Not yet.
You never.
I can't work like this, Adam. But yeah, no, I agree. I think it's an interesting full moon for sure. But boy, everything's been square. We're really working out that last bit of Saturn Uranus square.
Dude, if I never series. Have to utter the phrase Saturn Uranus again in my life.
I know.
Like, so tired of those two planets in a square with one another. And honestly, just tired of Saturn. I think I have Saturn fatigue at this point where I'm like, I'm just ready for Saturn to be in a feminine water sign that's of the nature of Jupiter. That ought to be different. Okay. You know, like, anything but Saturn, like Saturn feeling like the Lord of the universe in its own signs, you know?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, February 10th, Mercury conjoins Pluto. This is a long time coming since Mercury went retrograde in Capricorn. And so it's spent a long time in Capricorn. It's culminating, about to leave and enter Aquarius the next day on the 11th, but it goes through a conjunction with Pluto. I feel like, you know, Mercury Pluto is a bit like when I was a kid, there was a store that they sold like magic tricks and Halloween costumes. It's a bit like Spencer Gifts, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And they had this one thing. It was like, what is it? Like a, it's like a barrel. And inside the barrel were brown paper bags stapled shut, and they were grab bags. And you could, they were like, I don't know, they were probably like $3 or something, $2. And you just, it was a big mystery. And inside of it were, you know, like, I look back now and I'm like, it was, you know, they were super stupid little things, rubber balls or, you know, like a hand that you could slap and it would stick on things or something. Like, you know, like the grocery store toys in the quarter machine type of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you didn't know what it was. And I feel like with Mercury and Pluto, it's sort of similar in that, like, you just don't know what's going to come out of your mouth. It's a, you know, like, you just don't know what's going to come up in your dream, or you just don't know what email you're going to get. And, you know, I have to say, with it being in, you know, with Pluto in a Saturn ruled sign, I'm not optimistic about whatever's in the grab bag. Like, it doesn't like make me feel really excited. You know, like, it feels like, oh, I'm sure the news is going to be serious, and I'm sure the news is going to have the gravitas to it. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like that's kind of the image that comes to my mind, is like, it's like the grab bag. Hermes is going to bring something out, and it will probably be sort of subterranean and plutonian. Maybe relieving and purgative, like something you have to get off your chest or something like that. But yeah, those are the images that come to my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. That actually made me think of with this transit in when you go up the coast to Salem, at Massachusetts. There's it's always known for the Salem witch trials, and during a Halloween, it's like insane. Like, you cannot get into the town because there's all this sort of like Halloween goers to go. But there's this whole street in Salem that is basically like occult stores and, you know, new age stores and all these things. And I've gone in for like tarot readings sometimes. And like, you go into the back of this dark room with like a black cloak, and like, it's always an interesting reading and a really cool reading to do it. But like, it has that sense of like, you're going into the underworld to get some information. And I don't know what information I'm going to get, and I sure as hell hope it's not as scary as this looks. And it never is. But I remember the first time, it was before I did anything like astrology or spiritual work, and my friend brought me, and I'm like, where are we and what are we doing? And the woman was perfectly lovely who did the reading. She did a great reading, actually, and stuff. But I think of that sort of idea, right? You're going kind of into a dark corner to get information, and you're not sure of what that information is going to be. But sometimes with Pluto, it's helpful. I mean, I'll put a optimistic Sagittarius spin on that. You know, it's not easy to see, but it's something that needs to be brought up to be seen. Yeah,
that's well said. So we'll be visited by Mercury conjoined Pluto on February 10th. And we've said a few words about that magic, dark mystery that's not as bad as we think it'll be. now let's go on.
The ghost of Christmas Mercury.
That's right. Christmas Pluto. I mean, the thing is that it, you know, it can bring up treasure. Like, there, you know, Pluto means riches, and sometimes there's treasures and there's healing that comes up as well. Let's go to February 15th, which brings us to one of the most exotic and anticipated transits of the month, which is Venus's conjunction with Neptune while she's exalted. I mean, you know, I feel like this is just such a quintessential, like, dreamy, mystical, romantic quality. I feel like this is the perfect transit for Valentine's Day. Like, you really couldn't ask for a transit better than this, but my advice would be don't get married or pregnant under this transit, because you may not be sure the choice you are making is the is like the right choice a week later. But you could pretend to get pregnant, and you could feel like you want to get married, and you know, have lots of fun with that for a couple of days. No, I'm playing. Some people, maybe they do, you know, this is like a, in all seriousness, aside from being careful of, like, sort of the romantic delusions of, you know, and sort of grandiose fantasies and things like that, it's a super romantic transit that will often be very healing. It will be very imaginative. It's a wonderful transit under which, seriously, to, like, have, whether, you know, it's a staycation or you go out somewhere. I also think about things like, you know, going to, like, a spa or a sauna or something, and having that deep, meaningful conversation, even just, like, with a friend. But yeah, Venus, Neptune, we could say a million things. What else comes to your mind, Alex?
Oh, I mean, you know, on the more philosophical, higher, you know, high expression of this, you might think of just real unconditional love, which is such, you know, it sounds so, we say unconditional love a lot in spiritual circles. We talk about it a lot, but I don't think there's anything harder for the human psyche to really process the idea of divine unconditional love, like no conditions on that. And I feel like this is a transit of, I'm thinking a lot about forgiveness lately, because Neptune's been in my eighth house for, you know, the last 600 years. And it's been a lot of that sort of work, but an idea of, like, you know, where can my heart expand to see something from a perspective of love that doesn't place conditions on my own heart or somebody else? I'm just going to, you know, like so many teachers will say, choosing love at one point. I could definitely see having a super fun Valentine's Day, just having a Valentine's Day, making sure you wind up after that Valentine's Day with what you wanted. Because Neptune can create that sense of, whoa, man, you know, you are the cosmic lover I've had through 18 lifetimes, and we finally found each other. Or did you just meet at a bar and you had a couple drinks and, like, you know, like that sort of thing? So that's a possibility. But, you know, it's an exalted Venus. And I think with the journey that Venus has been on for the last couple of months, it's a lovely transit. And Venus Neptune is always a really fun and in combination to work on when I have clients to talk about. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. It's interesting how, you know, you'll run into different ways that people have of talking about planets. And of course, one of the most obnoxious things people end up talking about with Neptune can be like, oh, watch out for illusions, you know, like, watch out for fantasies. You know, I think Neptune is a planet that often invites us into the subtle and timeless, romantic and imaginative. And so with Venus exalted there along with Neptune, you know, probably most of our lives need more of that, not less of it. Probably most of us are more in danger of not living an imaginative enough existence than we are prone to delusions. You know, I'd say like, I really feel like the warning with Neptune that you get so regularly and like so immediately, like just be careful of delusions. It's like, not be careful of living a boring life, you know, like
exactly.
Be careful of not having color and texture and sound and magic, you know,
and art and music and fan, you know, how many amazing stories and like, you know, just something like, let's bring up our favorite Lord of the Rings, Adam, Lord of the Rings, right? That's such a, we wouldn't have like that incredible symbolic Star Wars, any of that. That's all Neptune. It's all fantasy. It's all imagination. It's all pushing the boundaries of what is real or might be real. And who cares when you're watching the story, you know, when you're immersed in the book or so to speak.
Yeah. You know, I just went out for tea with a friend and we are reading our way through a famous book. I think it's called Meditations on the Tarot. And it's like Christian, it was written by like a Christian hermeticist. And so they're kind of like, you know, hermetic / mystical Christian reflections on the major arcana. And I think it was written at least like over 100 years ago or something. I don't know. It feels like it's a really old book and it was written like anonymously too. I don't think we know who wrote it, but anyway, the first text was The Magician. So we read through that and then we met up for tea and like talked over that passage. And one of the things that we were talking about is like what the magician has on the table. And you know, the tarot card, The Magician, do you know, like, can you,
I do, I don't know a lot about the tarot, but I know the card. Yeah.
Let me see if I can pull it up.
That's actually something I want to learn more about. It's been hard for me to sort of conceptualize tarot, but I feel like if I took a class or.
Yeah. You know, the tarot to me is just such a compliment. I'm not into one-to-one correlations, meaning I don't like trying to find like, well, this card is this planet and, you know, stuff like that. I'm definitely not. Can you see it on the screen now?
Yeah.
All right. So there's the Magician card. He's got like he or she or they have a variety of tools on the table. All of the different images from the other suits. So you have a pentacle, you have a staff, you have a wand, you have a sword, and you have a cup and so forth. But anyway, this, and I just pulled this up randomly. So that image, though, one of the things that it is depicting is someone who is an adept when it comes to working with symbols. They have all the symbols out on the table. And in my experience of, you know, talking about that card, and I'm going to relate this back to Venus and Neptune. When you live your life as a symbolist, which is even broader than just being an astrologer, astrologer is a type of symbolist, we could say. You live your life through symbols, then it is as though you're having an experience, right? Like maybe I'm playing basketball out in the backyard or something, and someone's car breaks down on my street while Mercury is retrograde, you know, and it's retrograde in my third house. Mercury's stationing to turn retrograde. It's in the third house of my neighborhood. I'm playing basketball with my kids. Well, I experience Hermes. That traveler, that passenger, that vehicle, that stopping of motion in my neighborhood, I experience as Hermes. And so in my life, because I have many experiences like that day to day, because I'm a symbolist, it's like I'm the magician. I have the ability to work with experiences through the lens of symbols in a way that very few people do. And it's an incredible blessing. It makes life so rich. So when I think of Venus Neptune, one of the things I think of is, you know, why do people get pulled into fantasies? Because for a lot of people who don't have symbols to work with regularly, a fantasy is like this amazing alternative to the mundane, you know, often boring existence that we're living.
Right.
You're like, yes, please sign me up, you know?
Right.
But the problem is that we're putting all of the weight of the need for psychic reality onto one person or one experience or one thing that opens up magically. and really what's opening up is that timeless, immaterial, magical world that we need to learn how to develop daily, consistent relationship with. So if right. anything, with Venus and Neptune, what I would hope is that the experience for people, that whatever opens you to magic, it's not something that's just, it's a one-time thing, or it's a push all your chips into the center on this person you meet, but that rather it's a recognition that, yeah, like my life needs more magic. And I think the best way to have more magic in your life is through symbols. And, you know, that might be, maybe that's your record collection. Maybe that's film. Maybe that's, you know, tarot or astrology. But I think people who are symbolists find ways of keeping that magic portal open through metaphors and myths and storytellers. And we, that's how it ends up happening somehow.
That's so beautiful, Adam. I love that so much. I mean, it's interesting too, because I was thinking about this the other day. So it's funny you brought this up. I thought of, you know, being a musician and studying music for so long, and music is a representational symbolic idea. And especially even in classical music, there's all sorts of tone poems where there's a story that's told just with music itself. And it's one of the things that's helped me with astrology so much is that I grew into, and was, you know, my whole education was into this symbolic world, a representation of something else. And even into the, when you sort of interpret the subtle realms and energy work and all of those ideas, it almost always appears like a waking dream or a symbol, mm-hmm. a very Pisces type experience. It appears, you know, it's not so much like, you know, I put on my magician's hat and like can suddenly see when your husband will arrive or whatever it is. But there are symbols and interpretations and colors and archetypes that form a representation of something. And that the cool thing about that, and the thing I've always loved about doing readings for people in astrology, is that those symbols can be turned in many different ways. That's the sort of, you know, manipulation, I think, of the magician's spell, so to speak, mm-hmm. is that there's different ways that those can be turned. And, you know, I'm a Neptune defender just because I have Neptune, you know, strongly in my chart. And that has been something that I've always considered to be a great gift of Neptune, is the ability to see representationally, because it allows me to see a much broader perspective of information and work with it in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that one of the words that James Hillman used quite often to describe what I think we're both describing was the word image. But what he meant by image was not like just a pictorial representation, like a stop sign is a symbol for the command to stop, you know, but more like a transparent medium that's reflective, but takes you, it delivers something experientially. And that's what I think of when I'm hearing you talk about music in the way that you are. That's what's coming to my mind.
Yeah, it's for instance, like Richard Strauss, one of the late 19th, early 20th century composers, wrote in his early part of his career what were called tone poems. And it was basically, he would do Don Juan or Don Quixote, or there was one called Death and Transfiguration. There's another one called A Hero's Life. And they're all, there's no words, there's no chorus, there's no singing. It's only music representing these, a story he's telling or representing with it. And they're quite beautiful and amazing, but it's, you know, when we were studying them, I remember in college when we were studying them, we were always studying them as representations and how music can be a way that you, like when you're reading really good fiction, the author leaves just enough room for you to imagine the character for yourself, you to imagine the situation for yourself. Yeah. There's an element of participation that's in it too, when it's symbolic, that I think is important in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's participatory. That's a word that comes to my mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about this sequence is if we go forward a day, the sun can join Saturn and poops all over the party. No, I'm just kidding. And then the next, I know, right? Well, if you from the 15th to the 20th, it's interesting because the 15th, you have Venus conjoining Neptune. The 16th, the sun conjoins Saturn. And then the 20th, a new moon in Pisces.
Right.
Remember, for everybody watching this, when the sun conjoins a slower moving planet, or when a faster moving planet conjoins the sun, it's like a reset within the synodic cycle of the sun and that planet. So between the sun and the planet. So here we have effectively the death and rebirth of Saturn taking place.
Yep.
After a Neptune-Venus conjunction, and then what happens shortly after, within several weeks, Saturn enters Pisces, right after a new moon in Pisces. So when we're, one of the reasons that I thought it'd be fun to stop and emphasize this imaginative realm of Neptune and Venus and Pisces is because what we're really seeing this major shift of focus into Pisces toward the end of February and all the way through the beginning of March, which is also captured by the death of Saturn. The sun conjoining Saturn is like a death of Saturn and rebirth of Saturn. Saturn will start gradually appearing as a morning star, and as Saturn does so, we'll be moving into the watery, you know, oceanic territory of Neptune, the exaltation of Pisces, the rulership of Jupiter. So I would almost call it like a melancholic, romantic, mystical, imaginative dawning that's happening toward the middle of February, all the way through the first week or two of March. And Saturn's right at the heart of it, which means to me, this reset moment of Saturn, I don't think a lot of people are going to, I mean, you could feel it very intensely, but I think for a lot of people, it's not so much this moment as it is the transition that this moment reflects over the coming weeks.
I agree. I think what's been really interesting to see, Adam, is these two new moons in a sequence, right? So the new moon in Aquarius that, like, to me, paves the way for Pluto's entrance into the early degrees of Aquarius. And now we have this new moon at one Pisces that seems to be the harbinger of Saturn moving into the sign too. So I think that these two new moons in a row are, like you're saying, and maybe I'm just saying in a different way, indicating not just new moons, but the dawning of whole new longer term cycles.
Yes.
Saturn in a water sign, Pluto moving into an air sign, so that I think it's really interesting, that sequence from those two new moons.
I feel like Saturn entering a water sign while Pluto enters an air sign is taking everything into a much more celestial and imaginative direction. For example, Pluto in Earth for several decades really works on very, very earthy things, right? Saturn's been all around the clock since Pluto's been in Capricorn, but the past 5 years we've had Saturn in Earth and air while Pluto's in Earth. So you get the feeling of like heavy long term structural and ideological changes, something like that. But baseline is very earthy with Pluto. Saturn moves into this very romantic, melancholic position in Pisces, very imaginative, at times mystical, very idealistic, but in a much more embodied emotional way. Like, what do I really want with my whole feeling body? That kind of idealism. Not like the idealism of the architect in Aquarius, right? Rather than Pluto doing this deep, long, process-oriented work in an earthy place, Pluto's going to start doing it in a very mental space. So when I look at that together, I'm like, oh, this is interesting, because we're shifting into a space where ideas have to change. And, we're moving from like focus on the structures of the world and to the ideas of the world. And that, I think, in and of itself, along with a very romantic Saturn in Pisces, is just going to feel really different.
It's such an interesting thing. I like that. The whole idea of the mental sphere with Pluto, right? And that there's, in order, I think what people are sort of sensing, we've said, like, there's all this structural stuff that's been happening with Pluto in Capricorn. And now we go into a place where I've just had this intuition that there are ways of thinking and organizing ourselves as humans that have not even been conceived of yet, they're not based on the classical binary ideas we've kind of seen of the past. And this sort of like, there's a real like completely new paradigm that's possible with Pluto there. And that Saturn beginning this in Pisces is, if I went back to just a real easy, simple idea of a grounded or practical imagination. Well, how do you make, you can be idealistic, but yeah, there has to be some kind of structure to it, sort of idea. Then Mercury comes into the square that you're, which is interesting too on that heel, those heels.
I was anticipating you. Sorry. I didn't.
No, that's okay.
Hope that didn't cut you off.
No, actually it was going on the same idea where I was thinking about Mercury moving into, it's perfect. I was thinking of Mercury moving into Aquarius and then squaring Uranus. I just feel like these new moons, they're like tastes of this, or they're like little like appetizers of the, what we will explore in much deeper senses over the next much longer epochs of time.
There are certain moments where I think we experience an invigoration of, like, especially when I think of Saturn moving into Pisces, and, you know, kind of go back into the 1990s when Saturn was in Pisces last, I think it was probably around 93 or 4 or something like that. But, maybe all the way up until early 96, 95, something like that. But that space was filled with so much angst in film and music, for example.
Yeah.
And yeah. Angst does something, I think, that's really, really important. Angst is the, if I had to put it this way, like when I look at what my life was like at that time, and I was a teenager, I was learning to play guitar, stuff like that. It was like I wanted to grab the world by the throat and say, I have thoughts and feelings and you have to listen to them. you have to take them seriously. I need to be heard. And, you know, these thoughts and feelings that I have are so extreme and they feel so important and meaningful and at times beautiful and at times heavy and sad. But there's so much, and I just need them to be taken seriously, says Saturn in Pisces, you know?
Yeah.
Pluto in Aquarius, to me is like someone who, like, let's just say at its best, that's Pluto moving into Aquarius says, all right, not only will we take its, how you're feeling into account, but, we'll get a team of celestial architects together that can start building worlds based on how you're feeling, based on all these intense emotions that you're having. I think it's going to take a while, but that's really what Saturn in Pisces is. The next 2.5 years as Saturn is moving through Pisces, Pluto is ingressing into Aquarius.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to, I think it will feel really nice. It will, like you said, different. I'm hedging my bets on, getting a huge, like it's going to be the next age or whatever, but definitely different. And I feel like, you've mentioned in a couple of your videos, and I've definitely felt it with our clients. It just will feel, I think, Pluto in an air sign a little less going into the, trying to drill through the earth all the time and trying to do things that are really structural and like a little bit more easier to move around in the air sign, a little literal breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it's like, you're moving from like it reminds me in ayahuasca ceremonies. I remember the shaman one time talking about the different ikaros, these melodies that the shamans whistle. And they would talk about, ikaros that are meant to take you down into the earth. And then ikaros that are meant to take you up into the sky. And I couldn't have told you the difference because I just felt like I was riding a 1,000-mile-an-hour roller coaster for the first, 10 ceremonies or something. But as time went on, I'd be able to actually recognize those different subtle differences in the quality of the visionary space being opened up because I was getting my bearings in the experience, And like when I think about Capricorn, I think about kind of like angry but magical dwarves, like in The Hobbit, pounding away at the heart of the mountain to find, magic, but it could be dark magic and the devil or a dragon or something that's in there, And
totally.
But you move into Aquarius and it feels like, maybe a bit more like Hogwarts, or it feels a bit more like, Gandalf and the like, a school of wizards or something. It just, it has a much like lighter, more like feathery, airy quality to it. And it's just like, oh, it's, what is Pluto going to be like in that sign? That ought to be really interesting.
I think too, if we, you know, like with Tolkien, I could even see the elves as a very air type. They're kind of elegant and float on, you know, like you see like Elrond being something. Like, and yeah, can imagine Pluto, like, you know, the Dark Lord coming to, you know, Rivendell, so to speak, like this sort of elegant, airy sort of feeling of immortality or whatever. And like this very having a reckoning of Pluto. It's going to be interesting for sure.
Could you imagine that the Rings of Power series, it has to end up reflecting this transition of Pluto into Aquarius at some point in the series then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Cause it's, you know, there's an idea in occult magic. We were talking about magic of like, that there are actually, you know, thought actually has structure and form, and there can be dark forms of thought that can be placed, you know, as a spell of some sort or whatever. I don't think Pluto always has to be that. That's a form of it. But I think that it is an excavation of the mental space in a lot of ways, and seeing what are possibilities we haven't considered because we've been so weighed down in these decaying ideas that need to decay in order to be reborn. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, imagine, and that's interesting because then it does make some sense that the Dark Lord was interested in technology that in a sense he thought was good, or he thought was useful or something. Yeah. I think we probably will get into a lot of people trying to save humanity, that are like, you know, actually like warlocks dressed in white, so to speak, you know. That would be a very fitting Pluto and Aquarius thing. Mostly I'm just hoping that Pluto and Aquarius brings us into a day and age where it is just it's a fact somehow that life, any kind of life, exists on other planets. I feel like that'd be such a game changer.
I think, you know, it's when I did on Instagram, like a 20-minute thing on big things I saw coming up for this year. And I was talking about Pluto exactly in that way of like, when Pluto last went into Aquarius, has been in Aquarius the last two times. So one was in 1530, I think, and the other was in around 1789. Those were both times, I mean, we're just talking about European history, of course, or cherry picking history a little bit, but one, you know, 1530 was when Henry VIII broke from the Catholic Church. Uh-huh. Which was paradigm changing, you know, for the way like, you know, a power structure operated in Europe. And then you had a lot of stuff during Pluto, you know, during the late 18th century that was setting up a paradigm shift of how we see the world, you know, the rise of the Enlightenment and the science, you know, the rise of the scientific worldview. And the not long after that, you know, Mary Shelley writing Frankenstein. Well, Pluto was in Pisces, but she was writing about events of Pluto and Aquarius. How far should we go with ideas that we come up with? And so I think life on other planets, Adam, would have for us today that kind of paradigm shifting shake to our consciousness, something we always thought was true. The Catholic Church will always be, you know, and Henry VIII breaks from it, right? Now suddenly there's a split from that. Something that totally shatters our entire conceptualization of the universe. Even micro life on Mars or Europa or something that within the solar system, you know?
Right, exactly. That's a great point. And so we'll be saying a lot more next month. Next month is going to be out of control because we're going to be looking at Saturn into Pisces, Pluto into Aquarius, and, you know, probably our heads will probably literally pop off as we're talking. So
Adam and Alex 8-hour telethon on Pluto and Aquarius.
Yeah, exactly. So last but not least, Mercury squares Uranus February 21st. This is coming right after the new moon in Pisces. I feel like this is right on track with, you know, this kind of shift into Pisces, Saturn culminating in Aquarius. It feels nice that it's like something's lighting a fuse right here. And, you know, I think the transition into Pisces is not, it doesn't, you know, it's not like one that I would describe as like Saturn shifting into Pisces and Pluto into Aquarius is going to be like a Uranian moment of sudden, crazy, unexpected change. I don't think it'll be that dramatic. I mean, we could definitely see some events around the ingresses, But it's like we're having every opportunity between the middle of February and the end of February to change our minds, to open ourselves up, to start expanding and opening into something that is definitely shifting in March with the two planets moving signs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And interestingly set up, you know, Mercury squaring Uranus, that can break open the mental processes or, you know, help you think or communicate, you know, just kind of classical Mercury ideas in ways that have not been considered before that will be helpful when you go through these sort of slow grind transits of the outer planets that work on those in a much more detailed, sometimes even in the background kind of way. Like it's that old thing of like the fish in water doesn't know, in the ocean doesn't know what's in water. Like we've been in these paradigms for so long, especially with Pluto. These are little, like I've been saying, a little like bite size. These transits going on right now through Aquarius and Pisces.
Yeah, context is
give it a sense of that.
Right. Yeah. And like you're saying, context is everything. This is not the same as any other Mercury Uranus square because right after it happens, Pluto and Saturn change signs. Whatever little light bulbs are going off, whatever little Mercury Uranus moments of surprise, excitation, the unexpected, that's popping off right before these two planets change signs. So it makes it a little bit more exciting. I think we'll leave it there. Those are the major transits of the month. Perfect. Those are the ones that I wanted to look at today. I feel like we did a pretty good job. Any last thoughts you want to add for February?
I would look at this Sun square Uranus and Venus. So what we just first talked about, just bookmark some things around this and then come back to them in the middle of the summer when Venus goes through her Kazemi with the Sun again, square Uranus. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a story, there's like a 6-month story that's being started with that square in Aquarius that sort of winds up once the Sun moves into Leo this summer. That's just the place I would, would just say bookmark it and notice what's going on and see what's going on in the midsummer, and especially and watch with Venus's movements too, because that's going to be, I think, a major moment this summer that's tied to this, what we talked about.
Yeah, great point. The dynamism from Venus this month comes back in a big way. Later in the summer, the Venus Kazemi, Venus retrograde. That'll be, and it's, you know, in a square with Uranus again. So that's a great point. I think we've said everything that I had on my list to say. I want to point everybody to Alex's website, alexamorosi.com. Book a reading with him. Check out his other work that he's up to. You can also follow him on Instagram, Alex Amorosi Healing. So glad to have you here again. Alex is going to be a big one next month. So we're going to have to start prepping our notes for probably what's going to be the most watched videos I make in 2023, I would think, with those two planets changing signs.
I am so excited, and that's going to be really, really fun. I'm going to start doing some research on that now and historically too. It's just really going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to that a lot.
Well, if the music of the last Saturn in Pisces, which everyone's raving about right now, because that's one of the things that we do. If the music of the last Saturn in Pisces era has anything to say, then at least we know we're going to get into like some really good angsty, like I'm going to have to get like my flannel, you know, pretend like I'm a skater all over again, like I did when I was in seventh grade, you know, not a skateboarding bone in my body, but I just tried to make sure I looked like I was one. So.
Yeah. Just quickly, a friend and I snuck into a Courtney Love concert. Saturn was in Pisces. God, it's that's one extreme of that. But I remember that clearly now as you were bringing up the music, I was like, oh my God.
Was it Hole? Was her name, band's name Hole? Wasn't that it?
I think so. My friend was more into it than I was, but we were there in our 90s flannel and not caring attitude. So,
dude, for sure. All the good, there was great movies too. We'll have to review that next month. Yeah. Well, anyway, sure. Alex, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it as always. For everyone out there, if you're new to the channel or if you've been here for a while, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and thoughts on the month ahead. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can check out the transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com, where you can also learn more about my readings, classes, any questions you have about anything coming up, the masterclass series that starts in February. Check that out under the courses tab. Email us with questions, info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, that's what we've got for today. I hope you guys all have a great month ahead. We'll talk to you again later. Bye.
Bye, everyone.